Welcome to the Working Genius Podcast, where we discuss anything and everything related to the six types of working genius and how it impacts your work and your life. I'm Patrick Lincioni. I'm your host today, joined by my regular crew, Cody Thompson. How you doing, Cody?
Doing great.
Matt Lincioni on mic. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
And sitting in for Tracy Noble today, we have Amy Hyatt. How you doing, Amy?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Amy, you're the one that actually provoked this whole thing by saying to me one day, what's wrong with you, Pat?
Or I don't think it was quite like that. But
you have the genius of wonder, and you were wondering, like, is this the way it should be? So I appreciate that. Today, we're going to be talking about what, Cody?
Just something small. Jobs, careers, and hiring.
That's all. Very specific. Jobs, careers, and hiring. You know, the thing is, I've always been reluctant to use assessment tools around personality and other things for hiring. I think it's dangerous sometimes because the accuracy of the tool and, more importantly, the application of it can make it less than perfect, and you can miss out on really good candidates or falsely judge them. Frankly, I've never known exactly what an ENFP should do for a living, and I didn't really want to make a decision about hiring somebody or letting somebody go based on their Myers-Briggs type or their DISC profile or anything else like that. However, I've come to the conclusion that the six types of working genius, because it is so specific and because it's really about the tasks and the skills associated with doing specific kinds of work, that this is a tool that ought to be used for hiring, both for people looking for jobs to know what their geniuses are and what their frustrations are, and for companies that put a job posting out, they should know specifically the kind of work they're looking for so the right people can find that job and they can hire them. And the wrong people cannot even apply because they know that they don't have a chance at success. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because there's been this interesting transition. And we've always thought of this like, hey, turn the resume over. There's got to be more than the resume. But there wasn't, we weren't sure what that was for a long time. Obviously, there's cultural fit and how we define our culture at our company. But I don't know that there's, like you said, there's never been something that is, how applied is this to the activities that we need a person to do? Because on your resume, it can be a list of things that you have done, but what about what made you come alive in that list?
And right. It could be, well, I've had these jobs and I've done all these skills, but I hated them.
Yes.
So you should put that on your resume in red.
Right.
If you're looking for me to do these things I've done in the past, please don't, because I'm not going to be good at them.
I think we do in every job have to do some things we don't like to do.
Right. This isn't about perfection. Right. Nobody's got a job that allows them. I just do my genius all day long.
Right. But it's really fun to look back like on my 23 years at the table group and go, oh, the reason I've been so happy here is because I have been able to use my geniuses at every step of the way. I also had to use my not geniuses, which isn't always good, but that's what makes it so powerful, I think.
Right. Friday night, I was cleaning up boxes and stuff around the office because we wanted to clean up around here. And I like doing that kind of stuff sometimes. But if I had a job where I had to do things like that, now that's not a good example because it's such a menial thing, although it's really important nonetheless. But there's certain things that I don't like doing that I can do once or twice a week. But if I'm in a job where I'm asked to do that all the time, that's a problem.
But there's some people that love that. They love to clean things up, make sure things are running smoothly, and that's their gift.
In fact, my job is a nightmare for other people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think, what do you mean it's a nightmare? It's fun. And that's a beautiful thing. People on a team should be able to go, I'm so glad you love what you do because I'm terrible at it and I don't enjoy it. And you like what I do. This is beautiful.
Well, and that's like one of the big takeaways that we keep talking about is that at the end of the day, these six activities represent the idea that we need each other. And so on any given team in any industry, you need someone with different skills and talents than you. And when you're a team looking to hire in, what better way than to know what your gaps are? Like assess your own team, know where are our areas of strength and weaknesses, and what do we need to backfill? And then go out there and aside from a resume, look at, hey, we want to bring someone in here so that when they do get this job, that it's the most fulfilling, rewarding job in the world because they get to slide right into a role that they get to do exactly what they love doing.
You know, there was a book years ago called Do What You Love and the Money Will Follow. And people often scoff like, well, you know, but it's really true. In the long term, if you're doing a job for money that doesn't fire you up, you're not going to be successful at it and you're not going to make money. And not that money is the ultimate goal. I think fulfillment is. But if you're fulfilled, good things will happen. And so let's talk about, for people looking for jobs, how to use the six types of working genius.
Yep.
And so the first thing is know yourself. And not just in a quantitative way, take the assessment and then really understand which of these things gives you energy and joy, which you can do for a while, and that's okay, and which are working frustrations. And do not get a job. Go interview and find out whether or not they're going to ask you to do on a regular basis a preponderance of your job in your working frustration. That is going to be a lose-lose situation.
Well, and this is where I love that you use the relationship analogy, right? Because interviewing is more like a relationship than it is.
Well, it should be.
It should be.
Dating should not be, I want to go impress this person. It should be, I want to find out if I'm a good match for them and they're a good match for me. It should be like putting together a puzzle, but usually it's a performance art.
Right.
The company's recruiting you and you're trying to impress them. And it's no wonder that so many people don't love their jobs and get fired, or frankly, that many relationships don't work out.
When I first met my husband, I pretended that I was like an outdoorsy girl. Like I was like, yeah, I love to backpack. And he's like, you don't have any hiking shoes or a backpack. And so luckily he found me out soon, but you don't want to go into a relationship or a job completely pretending to be something you're not, because it's never going to work.
And luckily hiking wasn't, you know, the full fulfillment of his life.
He also pretended to like light romantic comedies, which was also fake.
Well, that's because every guy in the world has to do that just to get through the gauntlet. But it's true. We really should go on dates and go, okay, here's who I am. Here's who you are. Is there a lot of overlap here? Are we going to be spending a lot of time doing things that both of us love to do? Not just hobbies, but deeper than that. And that's what this is all about.
Well, it strikes me that like I have a couple of friends who are looking for jobs in this market. And one of the things I've actually read some job descriptions and tried to help them. And I can't help but talk about Working Genius in the midst of those conversations. But as I'm even reading the job description, I'm like, yeah, but what do you want from this person? You know, like,
right.
I get that you need 4 years of experience in software sales or whatever that is. But like, what do you want this person to do? Because now that we have Working Genius, like I used to fall in the exact same camp as you, Pat. Like, oh, is there anything that would really help us in terms of hiring? But now that we have this, I'm like, I think that there should be a two-letter code on every job that says, hey, this job is kind of for a wonder inventor, or this job is kind of for a enablement and tenacity person, or it would be great if you had some galvanizing in this work. And otherwise, it's sort of matching up some arbitrary criteria of your previous roles and not really understanding how that person is going to add value.
It's a crapshoot. Most jobs are a crapshoot. And let's talk about that. So if you're looking for a job, here's our concrete advice. Know yourself. Know what your working competencies are too, because those are not bad if you have to do that quite often. But do not get a job where you have to do your working frustrations on a regular basis, and that's going to be a big part of your job. So know that when you go interview, talk to people, put it in language that they can understand. Say, so what are you looking for me? Because what I love to do is this and this, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty good at this and this. And go to them and say, but I am really terrible at this and this. And if that's a big part of the job, well, let's save you and me a lot of heartache. So know yourself, be upfront, ask good questions. The companies that are doing the hiring, though, I think we have a lot more advice for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, so much of it comes down to what they do.
Well, it's interesting. I just had a friend who was part of a conversation, sort of a performance review type conversation, that in the middle of the conversation, he had taken Working Genius, but the rest of his team was unaware of it. And they were in the middle of it. He was like, I couldn't help but think of the categories of Working Genius because they were giving me this feedback like, hey, you know, we spun up this other project over here and you didn't really help on that. And so he enablement is one of his frustrations. And then he was an inventor and he came up with another idea and they were like, you did really well at this. And so he just laid out the whole Working Genius model. And he's like, hey, listen, here's where I'm actually good at this. And I have these two, and I know I'm pretty bad at this other area, but this person on our team, I rely on them to do this. It totally changed the nature of the conversation. He ended up actually getting a raise at the end of that, but it was exactly that. It was like that conversation around knowing what your weaknesses are. And I know you were moving on to advice for the people, but I think that that kind of lands the plane on, if you can just walk into the room and say, here's my weaknesses. And here's how I know I can leverage other people to do that.
And imagine if they said, oh, we don't have any jobs here that allow you to do the things you're good at. And the only job we have for you is your bad thing. That's a grace and a gift to go, it's time to look for another job.
Absolutely. Because you don't want that job.
And you don't have to feel like you're being rejected. It's just like, it's not a fit.
And then you say, oh, when you have something with this, let me know.
Yeah. Matt, you were going to say something.
Oh, well, I had an experience kind of looking for a job, and knowing the Working Genius now, I kind of look at it a little differently. it's similar to what Cody's friend did, except it's exactly the opposite. I had a job where I got experience doing lead generation and email marketing and stuff like that. And I was looking for a new job, and I ended up getting connected with somebody who was looking for somebody to do that type of work. And so I told him I had plenty of experience with that and that I could do it. What I didn't tell him is that I hated it.
How many people have done this in their career again and again?
Right.
And so I ended up getting another job doing the same thing. And I wasn't surprised when I hated that one too.
And now you're doubly qualified for a job that you don't love.
Exactly. Well,
and you can see how you could really get in a rut that way.
Well, people do it all the time.
Right.
Yeah. I just assumed that because I had experience there, that that's what I should be doing, when I really didn't even consider like what I like to do or what I'm good at.
What they should have said is, we're looking for somebody who's done this before and hated it. Would this be a good match for you? Right. This would be perfect.
Well, I actually find that happening a lot in the conversations I have with friends and family that are looking for another job, is they're like, I've been doing this for so long and I don't love it. I'm sort of locked into this on my resume side. And so as much as you can, you know, your resume, certainly there are jobs that require you to have specific technical skills. Sure. But outside of that, as much as you can say, here's how I'm going to add value behaviorally in terms of how we get work done, is that valuable to you? Because I can do that even outside of the area that I have some expertise in or some past experience.
Well, and that's the thing. Few of us work in companies where the jobs are locked into a certain way of doing that. And if we can go to our manager and say, this is what I'm good at, you can often restructure the way you go about getting it done. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes we work in a factory-like setting or in a pretty robotic one where people are like, sorry, this is the only way to do this. You work in a call center or something like that. But the truth is, in most jobs, if you go and say, this is who I am, they're like, well, why don't you lean into those things and try to get this job done? Mm-hmm. But when we don't do that, we end up accepting the way our manager is telling us to do things, and there's no wiggle room to actually find out what you love.
Yeah.
But let's talk now about, you're a company and you're hiring people, or you're a manager and you're looking for somebody. So often we say, well, I'm looking for an administrative assistant or a youth pastor or a head of marketing. And then we think, I know what that is. And then they look for people who have those things on their resume. But the question is, forget about the field you're in or the job title. Ask yourself, what do you want them to do? And how much flexibility do you have around them doing that?
What are the behaviors that they're going to show you that will actually help you get that job done?
Right. Like the youth pastor. It's like, I've worked in and worked with churches. There's a different kinds of youth pastors. And somebody says, I was a youth pastor for 10 years. It's like, whoa. What kind of youth pastor do you want as a church? Do you want somebody who's going to come up with a new program and be really inventive and creative and inspiring? Or do you want somebody who's going to go get an off-the-shelf program that works and just execute it really efficiently? Both of them are very acceptable ways to do youth pastoring. But if you have a preference, hire somebody that fits that. So it's not about the title, like I'm a youth pastor. It's like, do you want a galvanizing tenacity youth pastor, or right. Do you want an inventing, discerning youth pastor?
And some of the, it goes to the layer of like, how will that youth pastor contribute to the whole staff at the church? So it's not just like the technical requirements and experience you have as a youth pastor. Certainly, what do you want out of that person? But then secondly, do we have any gaps that if we were to hire someone who's a galvanizer, are they going to help us at a higher level get some stuff done?
Yeah. Imagine that the pastor loves inventing and discerning and loves to write books and come up with new ideas. He or she has probably already done this. Mm-hmm. So you bring somebody else who's an inventor, discerner, and they're just frustrated that they don't really need their skills. They wanted somebody to just implement things. This happens every day.
Yep.
And they come there and they go, why did you hire me? Well, you're a youth pastor. It's like, no, you needed somebody to implement what you came up with. Or it could be the opposite. Yep. And it's like, we wanted you to come in and do this. And it's like, aren't you going to come up with a new idea? And they're like, no, I thought you would do that.
Yeah.
I like to look at it like hiring the head of marketing at a company. People say, I need a head of marketing. And I would always say, do you want a tenacity marketer or an enablement one that's going to listen to what you say and just go crank? Or do you want somebody that's going to understand branding and strategy and creativity and help you figure out what market you're in and how to present yourself? That's a completely different hire.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't spell that out when you're in the job, when you're looking for somebody, and you don't make it clear to somebody that's applying, do you like to do these things? Then you're going to get a mismatch for the job. And that's probably why so many hires don't work out.
When it answers another question that we've been getting a lot around Working Genius, which is, hey, I'm a you know, ET, what job should I have? And the answer is you can have any job.
Right.
It depends on what they want from you. I mean, I was just working with a team where the leader of the entire organization was an ET. And it was like, that's great. We know exactly what you're good at. Now what we need to do is make sure that you tap into the people around you.
Fill the gaps.
And so it's not like every head of marketing has to be the idea person or the inventor. You could have an ET head of marketing. You just need to know what you're looking for. And I think that that's one of the big issues is, you know, when we're talking about hiring and careers, you know, or finding a job is, imagine a company and a place where you, you know, we talk about getting the right people on the bus, which is a cultural fit. That's Jim Collins' thing. If they're a cultural fit, great. But even a cultural fit, if you take them and you put them on the wrong seat in the bus, can get fired or be miserable their entire career.
Right.
And how many people, the hiring and job and finding a job thing is really about like fulfillment and retention, right. You know, putting people in jobs that they're uniquely equipped to do and get to do what they love, they very rarely leave and your company is more productive. And yeah. So I don't know that anything that we've done has lended itself more simply and acutely to that end.
You know, I think about technical jobs. What I mean by technical is very specific, and then the non-technical. Let's do a technical one. You need to hire a lawyer or an IT person in your company. Maybe it's a CIO, maybe it's just an IT technician, maybe it's your chief legal counsel, maybe it's just a lawyer in a certain department. People will go, okay, I know what to do. I need to find somebody who knows how to code in Fortran. I don't even know what the hell that means. Or somebody who has legal experience. But the thing is, what they do with that knowledge is going to vary completely depending on what that job entails. And a lawyer is not a lawyer is not a lawyer. Mm-hmm. There are galvanizing lawyers. There are discerning lawyers. There are enabling lawyers. There's lawyers with tenacity. There's lawyers with invention. There's lawyers with wonder. And it depends on what you need. And I don't see how we can have anything more than a 50% chance of success if we don't spell that out and then make that clear when we're interviewing people.
Totally. Well, and we have a living example, Matt. I mean, we hired you and Liam at exactly the same time, right? We actually hired you before we knew Working Genius, you know, then we came up with the model and we had you guys take the assessment. Now, I mean, you had very little job experience. This is both, you know, you had some internships and stuff, but if it were just in a vacuum, if all we had was your resume, imagine, I'm going to have you respond to this. If you now have Liam's job versus the job that we put you in based on your role or based on your Working Genius. How satisfied would you be doing what Liam's doing right now?
Well, if you had positioned me based on what it said on my resume, I'd be doing Liam's job, I'd be doing T-work, and I'd be miserable. And I wouldn't be doing good work.
And we would have. I mean, I don't want to tell you that we're not that smart. Right. Until we had this model, I would have probably said, well, Matt did that before. Let's have him do that now.
Yeah, Matt's a leader. He was the president of his fraternity. He was the team leader of his lacrosse.
He was the captain,
whatever you call it.
And so we thought, he's a galvanizer. And right. He was like, I did that because people made me because that nobody else
or
did.
Or I used my discernment to do those jobs. Right. That's how I showed up as a leader.
Yeah. So, I mean, this has worked for us in that way too. Now let's talk about a non-technical job. Let's say I need to hire an assistant. Let's say we were saying, Pat, we need to hire an administrative or an executive assistant for you.
I was your assistant for a while, and I have a very different genius than, say, Jackie, who does a lot of that for you now.
Exactly. Because we've worked with a CEO recently who had an assistant. Mm-hmm. Who was telling us, were you telling us that story? Tell us about that, Amy.
So she was a great assistant, but she would not do anything for the CEO without asking his permission. Whether that's her discomfort with making decisions on, you know, maybe that's a lack of discernment, or maybe he is so focused on being involved in every decision. I don't know, but whatever it was, she could not make a decision without him.
And what's interesting about me is like, I need an assistant, and we have one now, who can make the decisions without me even being involved.
Oh, yeah.
They need to understand. And the reason why you were so great for me for so long, Amy, is because you had, and you weren't really my assistant, you were the co-founder, but you handled that role because you had discernment and you could say, no, we don't even need to tell Pat about that. If I had an assistant who said, I'm going to put a list of all the calls that came in for you and you have to tell me which ones you want to make.
Oh, you hate that.
That would drive me crazy. But some people are okay with
right,
that.
Right, absolutely.
They're like, no, I'm going to tell this assistant exactly what I need them to do for me, and I need them to just go crank on it.
Some people feel uncomfortable that they wouldn't know all those. You know, like say, for example, like, how could I not know all these people that called for me? But you're like, I love not knowing.
Right. And then for me, like, I can tell you, a perfect assistant for me is probably a DT, because they have discernment, and then they go get stuff done.
Right.
Now, Amy was not a T. She was a D. She was great for that. Now I have Jackie, who's a GT. So we know where her geniuses are and what's a little off, but I'm leveraging their geniuses.
And yep. Jackie comes to Cody or me or Tracy or someone else with more D and asks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's great.
Well, and that's what I think is so interesting about the conversation, jobs, career, and hiring, because at the end of the day, and this is sort of our company, why do we exist, is to make work more fulfilling. It's like, at the end of the day, you want someone, you want a job where you are fulfilled and can use your skills. And the employer wants to put people in positions where they're fulfilled. And there isn't, up to my knowledge, something that does this well and this simply. And it's like, I've said this actually, and it was either right before or right after we did Working Genius, or we had that language, is I would go home to Lindsay sometimes after work and say, I can't believe that I'm in a role and in a job now where they let me do everything that I love to do and that I'm good at, and that they help mitigate the things that I'm not good at. You know, that didn't seem like a possibility to me. But now that we have the language, it's like, you guys are, everyone in this room knows exactly what my weaknesses are, and you guys put me in positions to utilize my strengths. That's far better than any bonus, compensation, accolade, anything. I get to do what I love.
Which is why
to
we pay you so little.
Right. it's a win-win.
It's a win-win. Yeah. You know, Matt said something before we started this, though, and it's important, and that is this tool, you don't just fill it out and then the company feels like what we need, and then you have somebody. It's about teeing up the right conversation. Mm-hmm. So you don't go, oh, these are your letters and these are what we wanted. I'm sorry. I mean, sometimes it's just that obvious. But what you do is you go, okay, this is what we think we want. Oh, this is what your skills are. Is there any way to make this work, or does this not make sense at all? Mm-hmm. So it's a qualitative conversation.
Instead of a black and white screening tool.
Right. Because some people want, can you just do a Rorschach test and tell me if this person belongs in this job? It's like, there is no such thing. But this narrows it considerably so you can have the right conversation.
Well, one of the first steps, honestly, is the team has to know what their gaps are, what their area, where they're well represented and where they're not. You know, I was working with a team that they had made a hire 3 weeks prior that intuitively, they knew that they needed this person. And when we looked at their team map, it was like, before this person, that they had zero invention and zero galvanizing. And this person fit right into those two roles. And I was like, what's great about this is that you intuitively figured out that these were whether you got lucky or it was some sort of intuition here, this person is going to slide great onto this team, but make sure that they feel the permission to do that. Like, they don't need to be an inventor, you know, or they're an inventor by nature. Make sure they have the permission even early on in their role to do that.
Well, like the company we worked with, the only a technology company and a big one, the only inventor they had on their team was their lawyer. Mm-hmm. And they changed his job. He still was in charge of legal things, but they gave him some help on that. And they said, we want you to spend a lot of your time coming up with new ideas for our company.
Which he was excited about.
Exactly. You know? And that's the win-win. But if you don't have that kind of methodology of understanding that everybody else on the team was like, no, none of us really like to invent things.
Yep.
And they were like, that's why we're so far behind on our products. Let's use the lawyer. Mm-hmm. What a great thing. So anyway, that brings us to an abrupt halt in our conversation about jobs, careers, and hiring. We are so excited to make this useful for people in staffing and for individuals looking for jobs, whether they're just getting out of college or they're in early retirement and want to figure out their next thing, or they're in a job right now and they want to make it better. This is a tool for drastically improving people's fulfillment at work and product, and helping hiring managers find more productivity and better. Boy, I'm just tongue-tied right now. Better people to do the work. All righty. Well, thank you guys for being here today. And we want to thank you for listening. We love feedback from the Working Genius podcast. And we will look forward to talking to you next time. God bless.